Call the meeting to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Bob?
Here.
Cindy?
Here.
Jay?
Here.
Nancy?
Yes.
Mark?
Here.
Eric?
Excused.
Kurt?
Here.
Okay, we have six assembly members present this evening. It's now time for the voluntary Pledge of Allegiance.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Okay, it's time for approval of minutes from past meetings. There's three different meetings, regular meeting minutes from April 3rd, Board of Equalization meetings from April 3rd, and May 1st regular meeting minutes. If there's no changes, we could approve all of those at once, if that's the will of the Assembly.
So move.
Second.
Okay, we'll approve those minutes as presented to us. Next item on the agenda is amendment and approval of meeting agenda tonight. So is there any amendments, or will we proceed with the meeting as or the agenda as presented? Need a motion.
I move to approve the meeting agenda.
Second.
Okay. All those in favor say aye.
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 Yeah, one change I would like to mention, though, on our agenda tonight, under discussion items, we have Mark Shear was going to give a little presentation, and without any objection from the Assembly, we can move him up to the first person on views related to items on today's agenda. And that way, if he gets bored, he could leave the meeting. So anyway, we'll keep moving forward here. Public hearings. There's a public hearing tonight on Ordinance 2017-07. And that's an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adopting the budget for the fiscal year July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018. I would entertain a motion, or is there anybody here that would like to participate in that public hearing on the budget? Okay, seeing none, that public hearing is closed. Next item, B, under public hearings, there's a public hearing on Ordinance 2017-08. This is an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adjusting the fiscal year 2017 budget for known changes. Is there anybody in the audience that would like to participate in this public hearing? Seeing nobody raising their hand, public hearings are closed. Bid awards, item six on the agenda. There's nothing listed there, no bids to award. And so now we're to visitors' views related to today's agenda. So, Mark, if you'd like to come up. Well, you're already here. Thank you.
Mayor and Assembly, thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak tonight. My name is Mark Shear. I'm a member of the Board of Trustees of the Alaska Fishery Development Foundation. I also sit on the Southeast Conference and the Sitka Chamber of Commerce. I'm an attorney by trade, but I've been in the seafood industry for about 30 years in one way or another. And I'm here to talk to you tonight about the Alaska Mariculture Task Force and the Mariculture Initiative. The Alaska Fishery Development Foundation is a foundation that was by its name for developing fisheries, and we've done lots of different things. About 4 years ago, we decided, or 3 years ago, we decided to focus on mariculture development in Alaska as a focal point of what we're trying to do. Out of that came the Alaska Mariculture Initiative. Many of you know Julie Decker, who is our executive director. She has been tirelessly working to develop this industry in Alaska for a number of years. And one of the things that came out of that effort was the Mariculture Task Force, which was created by the governor in March of last year. The task force is an agency and industry individuals that are to make recommendations about how to take this existing industry, which in past years there's about 30 small farms in Alaska. Last year they produced for the first time more than $1 million in revenue, which is a start. The Mariculture Initiative envisioned creating an industry that produced $1 billion in revenue. And hopefully in the next 30 years. we can do that. There's been a lot of progress in that. The recommendations are a whole series of different things, but one of the things that I wanted to emphasize here tonight is that this is an industry that is additive to what's already here. Let's see if we can. I had a PowerPoint presentation, but we don't need to go. Is that working? But it's all right. That's all right.
Right here.
Should we go ahead? So I think a couple of things that are kind of fundamental to talk about here. What is mariculture and what is it not? Now I'm in lights. So mariculture is not fin fish farming. That's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is farming kelp. The first commercial harvests of kelp in Alaska are occurring right now. It's the first time in history. There are farms outside of Kodiak, and there's a farm outside of Ketchikan that are both producing kelp. That kelp is going to be sold into a food market that's going to be put into pastas and different products like that. And it's a very exciting time for that. Also, we're talking about oysters and crab, and there's an operation out of Kodiak that is producing juvenile king crab. That's all right. So these are the products that we're talking about. There are a number of different operations around the state that I think are growing quickly. And so one of the things that I wanted to emphasize to you as this process goes forward, as the task force makes its recommendations in March of next year, is that in all of these mariculture lease site applications, if they are within the borough, they need to have the support of the borough to go forward. So anybody that makes an application is going to be coming to the borough to talk about their operation and what they contemplate, and hopefully get your support for that. So if you want to think about what can you do to help this process go along, that is one thing. Another thing that is important is to be open to the idea. I envision mariculture, kelp farming, or oyster farming, or one of these various things, as being supplementary to existing seafood operations. And I would encourage anybody that's considering this to utilize your existing infrastructure. Things like you have plants, many of which sit dormant for 7, 8, 9 months a year. You've got existing transportation networks that are already in place that could that you can add these species to. Think about it when they started doing geoduck and sea cucumbers back in the 80s. I was in the industry then. I remember when those fisheries started, and those were new fisheries that were added to the slate of products that these existing processors were already producing. So we've got existing infrastructure. Don't duplicate that if you can. You've got a community cold storage here that's got production facilities. You can hold product, you can freeze product, and there are a number of different products that you can produce using, half shell oysters. There's a company, Alaska Kelp Company out of Juneau, that's making kelp-based salsas and pickled kelp and having great success with that. It is really an opportunity to diversify the coastal communities. And as an economic development model, it is the low-hanging fruit. There is not, in my mind, I don't know of another economic development tool that keeps the jobs and the revenue produced from them in the community, like mariculture. There really isn't anything else out there. Tourism, I think that's fully developed, and we know that reality. A lot of the extraction-based industries, like timber and mining, it is a complicated and multi-year process to get new allocations of timber. It's a difficult process. Here, you just have to go to Juneau to get your site lease granted and start that process. There's an existing structure in place to get to start these farms, and it's at a relatively low cost. So that's the message that I wanted to convey, and I appreciate the opportunity and the invitation to come and talk to you. If there are any questions that you have for me, I'm happy to address them.
I just have one, because I remember having this conversation with you at Southeast Conference, and you were saying the startup costs are relatively low. I recall our conversation was that some of the startup costs were pretty high, and I wondered if there were sources of revenue that could help.
Well, let me address that in two parts. One is that there is a loan program, a revolving loan program through the state, where farms can access funds. It's $100,000 per year and $300,000 in the aggregate. That loan program is very favorable because, for example, oysters can take up to 3 years to grow out to market size. So you don't want to be making payments before you start getting revenue. And so it's structured in a way that your payments begin in year five. So that's a very beneficial process. As far as your infrastructure cost starting up, you know, what is a large cost? Relative to what? Relative to starting a sane operation, you know, it's probably fairly comparable or less to build the rafts and buy the equipment and do that. But if you're going to do this, I would encourage anybody to do it as a community. I mean, you have, you know, to through a cooperative format or something like that. Mm. Because you got to do things like you got to buy tumblers, you got to buy sizing machines that each individual farm, if it's small in scale, can't rationalize that kind of capital expenditure on a farm that is, you know, 20 acres and is producing maybe 1 million oysters a year. But if you have 20 farms or 10 farms that are combining to buy this infrastructure, now that total revenue supports the use of that, not everybody has to use it every day. So there's ways, I think, as a group to develop the scale is necessary to buy the to acquire the equipment that make them efficient. I mean, that's, you know, like any operation, you've got to be able to produce the product as efficiently as possible.
Bob, you had a question?
Yeah. If I was to start a process, what are the major hurdles I have to jump other than what Cindy talked about?
Obviously, financing is one, and you've got to be patient financing because, well, for oysters, it's a multi-year
investment.
I'm familiar
with that one.
Kelp is a little faster because you plant in September and harvest in August or in April, so it's less. You get a less than a year return on investment. The major bottlenecks, as I see now, are in addition to just the capital, for oysters would be getting your spat. Oceans Alaska has some capacity to do that. All of the spat that's brought into the state has to be approved by the state, or has to be produced in the state. There are 12 licensed hatcheries in the state right now. Most of them are fairly small scale. My expectation is that the industry will upsize as the need grows. It's going to have to, right? The other part of the Alaska Mariculture Initiative and the task force effort is to utilize the existing model of the Regional Aquaculture Association to produce that basic product, to produce your oyster spat or produce your kelp seed. And to use a model like that, number one, because we've already used it, we know it works. We know the way the system works, either through self assessment or other ways to fund it. You have the technology already in place. That would be my suggestion, would be use that existing infrastructure and expand that. So seed is number one. And the number two is having sufficient testing facilities. All of the product that goes out on the oyster shellfish side has to be tested. The only testing facility that's approved in the state's in Palmer. So you have to go to Palmer to get it tested. But if you did it, but if there's enough volume, perhaps there's the lab in Sitka that the tribe, the Sitka tribe started, could be upgraded to get certified to certify product in Southeast, or you could have a lab here locally to do that. Kelp is less of an issue because you don't have PSP issues with kelp. It can go immediately to market.
Like, any other questions of here?
So when you file for a site The public hearings, probably people don't want it in their backyard, that kind of stuff, so some of those other hurdles like that?
The every site application, every site application goes to the state. There is a multi-agency application that's already prepared. As part of that process is a public notice requirement where it's published for a period of time in a statewide periodical where there's an opportunity to object. Every state has to take into consideration, every site lease application has to take into consideration other historic uses in the area. It doesn't mean that they will be rejected on that account. You can't put a site, say, in a hatchery release area or a cost recovery area. You can't, there are certain specific restrictions. There are places where you don't want to put it. You don't want to put a site in a harbor where you may get, a shellfish site in a harbor where you may get contaminants from the vessels that transit.
Yes, sir. Kurt's question, then I would have to have both, for instance, kelp, I would have to have both a state permit and a federal permit in order to be able to do it.
The federal agency review is part of the state application process. It's in the same when you get your site lease from the state. It's already been approved by the feds. There's a process, and you'll see if you go to the website, you'll see there's a whole chain of analysis that in which agency is reviews the application at which time.
Any other questions? Thanks.
Mark,
Yes, sir.
Since we didn't have the PowerPoint, and for people listening at home, could you give them that website, please, in case they want to look at this for themselves?
Sure. Yeah, there are two websites. I would direct you to the Alaska Fishery Development website. There's an Alaska Mariculture Initiative page that has a lot of a tremendous amount of information, including financial information. And then there's the Alaska Fish and Game Aquatic Farming site. If you just do Alaska Fish and Game Aquatic Farming in your search, it'll come up. It's got applications and more information than you could possibly want to read.
Thank you.
Great, good idea. And Liz probably has that information, I would imagine.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah.
Yeah, Liz has all the information that you need and has access to it.
Okay. Oh, great. Mark, thanks.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Yeah. Enjoy the sunshine. Yeah, going to unplug stuff.
I'm a witness.
So are we ready to proceed?
Shall I fall over?
Okay, now we're back to visitors' views related to the agenda. Anybody in the audience that wants to speak to views related or that are on the agenda tonight, step forward, state your name, who you represent, please. How many, just for an idea, how many people are going to want to testify tonight? If I get a show of hands. Okay, that's not too many, so we don't have to be too limited on our individual times. All right, thank you.
Okay. All right, I'm Gary Morgan, an electrician who works for Petersburg Municipal Power and Light, and I'm representing myself. I want to speak to the Assembly and the public about the recently proposed organizational change which put Power and Light under the management of a utility director. I'd like to state that I'm opposed to this idea, and I'd like to share a few reasons why. An electrical superintendent has traditionally been a position held by an electrical engineer or someone similar experience and background with training in electrical distribution. I'm told 14 years ago, Joe Nelson took over, and before that, there were outages every week. Petersburg suffered constantly by these outages. Since then, this utility has undergone changes and improvements that were implemented by an experienced electrical engineer. Weekly outages are a thing of the past, thanks to good leadership. It takes a person trained in the electrical industry to recognize and make these positive changes. This is not a position that someone from a non-electrical background can learn while on the job. It requires technical training. Furthermore, our utility has some very antiquated equipment that needs replacement. Now's the time, above all others, that we should be led by an electrical engineer. Double E's, as we call them, are qualified to guide our utility through all the necessary upgrades and modernization that's already 20 years overdue. The money's saved and in the bank. We just need the right person with the right qualifications to lead the design. The utilities director idea may save a little money on paper, but in real life, you'd lose those savings plus more in consultation fees. It's a lot cheaper to hire an electrical engineer full-time as your superintendent than pay a consulting firm to lead a manager with no electrical experience. Plus, a full-time double E on salary saves the borough money on other departmental costs. Recently, Joe proposed the borough finance police station project, remove the backup generator from its plans and instead connect to the power and light emergency generation system. This saved the borough several hundred thousand dollars. These types of cost savings are only realized when you have an electrical engineer working for the borough. The engineering consultants for the remodel project recommended the more expensive option. Joe's plan saved the money plus maintenance and operating costs for countless years into the future. Not only does an in-house EE save money, they also serve as mentors for those working under them. I've relied on Joe and his knowledge countless times in only 2.5 years. When I don't understand something or need help interpreting a problem, I turn to the superintendent. Who do I turn to now for that help? Add some more money to the consultation pool. One of the most important reasons I don't support this organizational change is from a pure safety standpoint. The superintendent is responsible to make sure each trade is doing his or her job safely. The steps and procedures we follow during maintenance and outage events come directly from the superintendent. How would a director of utilities with no background in the electrical industry oversee the safety of those under him? How would an untrained person protect and direct linemen from invisible energy that he knows nothing about? What if the unthinkable happens and one of us were killed in the line of duty? Who's ultimately responsible for the safety of the utility and its workers? The worker with no one to look over his shoulder or audit his safety measures, or the utility director that's in charge of everyone's safety but has no electrical training or background? I know that times are tough for the state and borough. Everyone's looking for ways to save money. Here's what I don't get. The most financially stable and profitable apartment will no longer have someone qualified to run it, but that unqualified position will be compensated a significant sum more than the current electrical engineer of 14 years. Employees of Power and Light are expected to make up for the lack of an industry experienced manager, but get no additional compensation. The assistant public works manager gets a promotion and raised to take over the management of public works. Public works save money as it eliminates the assistant public works manager, but Power and Light gets a manager with no industry qualifications. Power and Light has $3 to $4 million in the enterprise fund surplus and could use that money to invest in upgrading its outdated infrastructure. Yet it lacks an electrical engineer with the training and experience to prioritize and direct the monies where they're needed. Put it in perspective, when an owner of a multi-million dollar fishing vessel hires a skipper with no commercial fishing experience, as long as it had an experienced crew, would that be a good way for a vessel owner to cut costs? Is this good business practice? How long do you think that vessel is going to remain profitable? Please let's table this idea and move towards finding the next Joe Nelson. We're wasting valuable time that could be spent looking for a suitable replacement. I have no doubt there are qualified and eager candidates in Southeast Alaska that would jump at this opportunity.
Thank you, Gary.
Other side.
It's on the other side of the podium there. Okay, next visitor, state your name.
I believe everybody got my letter. My name's Nathan Mitkiff. I'm the head electrician at Icicle Seafoods. I'm representing both myself and Icicle Seafoods in this matter. As a head electrician at Icicle Seafoods, which is the largest private consumer of electricity on the island, I have great concerns about the proposed change in management at Petersburg Power and Light. It concerns me that the city will be going from a qualified electrical power and light superintendent with knowledge and education of electrical generation and distribution systems to someone who just has administrative skills. At PFI, Icicle, I have seen as we have lost highly qualified people and replaced them with lesser qualified people, the issues that arise, not replacing qualified employees who know how to design, troubleshoot, and give day-to-day leadership has a very negative effect on the running of the facilities and the morale on the people under them. It often costs much more than anticipated because of having to redo things or having to hire outside contractors to engineer projects and troubleshoot issues that arise. I would ask the council to seriously consider replacing Joe with another qualified power and light superintendent. I think this will prove to be the most cost-effective option in the long run. Thank you.
Thank you, Nathan. Anybody else with views related to items on today's agenda?
Hello, I'm Richard Burke. I represent myself and the ATV, or OHV initiative. I listened to the last borough assembly meeting, and I heard a lot of people talk about their budgets getting cut. Essential services like the hospital and mental health. My OHV initiative raises revenue that could be used to help support these services. And it does this without hurting local business. Some of the assembly members are saying they don't see a need for this. They don't see a need to allow people to pay money to ride their ATVs on borough streets. They would rather raise sales tax and tax local businesses to the brink of bankruptcy than to allow for this new source of revenue. Revenue that could be used to fund essential services like the school and the hospital. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other visitors in the audience this evening with views related to items on tonight's agenda? Seeing none, we'll move to visitors' views unrelated to items on today's agenda. Is there anybody with a view unrelated to a topic that's not on the tonight's agenda? Seeing none, that takes us to board, commission, and committee reports. There are none slated there. Consent agenda, no items there. Report of other officers. That brings us to the mayor's report. We're still seeking letters of interest. We're seeking letters of interest for one position on the hospital board, three vacant seats on a historic preservation commission for different positions there. If anybody's interested, you could submit your application to the borough clerk. You can email it to dthompson@petersburgak.gov or mail it to Box 329, Petersburg, Alaska, 99833, or drop it off at the borough administration office at 12 South Nordic Drive. Payment in lieu of taxes, PILT, and Skirvel Schools legislation. The borough recently learned that PILT funding was authorized for fiscal year 2017 and payments should be issued by July 1st, 2017. Finance Director Tao budgeted for $550,000 of PILT revenue in the current 2017 budget. Reauthorization of Secure Rural Schools is looking positive, but it's still in the works. We're having a public hearing for proposed local improvement districts for street paving on Unimac, Vesta, and Pearl F Street. A public hearing regarding the proposed LIDs for street paving on those streets in the Severson subdivision will be held on Wednesday, June 14th, 2017 at 6 p.m. in the Assembly Chambers in this building. If an affected property owner opposes the creation of the LID, a written objection must be submitted to the borough clerk at or before the hearing. For more information, please see the public service announcement attached to this report. And after reading that again, I have a question for the clerk or the manager. Will these people that are going to be in the affected area be sent a mailed notification that this is taking place?
They have been.
Okay, thank you. Possible date change to the June 5th, 2017 assembly meeting. Got word that Finance Director Tao will be out of town on that date. If the assembly feels it necessary that Jody's here to answer questions, we could possibly move the meeting to Tuesday, May 30th at noon. Does anybody have any feeling on one way or another on that? Does Jody, would you be available by phone on the 5th of June?
I will probably be at the airport, so it might be a little iffy.
Oh, okay. So maybe that's just a heads up. We could, that we're considering that, we could change it if, after we see how the, you know, the ordinance on the budget goes tonight. Does that make sense?
And talk about it at the end of the meeting?
Yeah.
That sounds fine.
Okay. Excuse me, one other thing. Sent out manager evaluations. It's supposed to be turned in today. There's a little bit of a leeway there. But I need a member to help me with the manager evaluation conference. And that is supposed to be on the 22nd, the 26th of last year. Assemblymember Lynn assisted me. If everybody else is all right with that, we could do the same thing, or unless someone else is interested. Is that okay? Okay, so we'll keep that date there, Bob. Okay. And then the assembly addresses the draft evaluation in executive session on the, well, if it's not the June 5th meeting, I guess it'll have to be, if we change that date, we'll change it to the next meeting. And that is all I have. Now it's time for the manager's report.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Officers Thorson, Rossi, and Tate rescued a burn victim at the Narrows Inn fire on May 5th. Officers Rossi and Tate entered the building and pulled a victim to safety while Officer Thorson ventilated the smoke by breaking a window. Without these efforts, it's likely the victim would not have survived. The victim was transported, and his current condition is unknown. But second and third degree burns over a lot of his body. Our first DUI inmate to be housed on home confinement is scheduled to report on May 8th. Senate Bill 91 requires first-time DUI defendants to check in and then be released to serve their sentence at home. Defendants are required to telephone once each day to confirm they are at home as required. The E911 Phase 2 wireless capability testing is scheduled for May 31st. Once this is operational, we will have the ability to access subscriber and location information from 911 calls made by cell phones. We will capture information from North Kuprinoff and portions of Frederick Sound to South Mitkoff and Sumner Straits. All 911 calls from cell phones in this coverage area with service will be answered at our dispatch center. We do expect some overlap and will transfer calls outside of our area of operations to the appropriate public safety answering point. Officer Wachter has successfully completed field training. He's taken a few days off, and then Officer Plagans is in the process of moving his wife Jolie and their household goods up to Petersburg. We'd like to welcome Jolie to town. OCS is a new worker in town. Linda Wall was in town from the 7th of May through the 12th. She will be here on a full-time basis beginning in early June and is committed to spend 2 years in Petersburg. So welcome to town. Community Center will be closed on this Friday the 19th at 1 p.m. and all day Saturday the 20th for the Little Norway Festival. Public Works crew rebuilt a steep road shoulder on 8th Street thanks to Martin Odegaard, who led that work and supervised the crew. With assistance from the water plant staff, Carl will be developing a fluoride fact sheet that describes the fluoridation system and safeguards that are in place for the operators and the public. With all the discussion about the fluoride, we thought that'd be a worthwhile thing to have available for folks. We're continuing to work with the wastewater staff, or they're working on it, to try to get a plan together to improve our wireless network connection to the treatment plant. We thought we had a solution. It doesn't make any sense, but it was still interfering with the Manor intercom system, even being on the antenna over by the fire hall. So working on that, and hope to see if we can get an answer to be able to make sure that they still have network access out there. Wastewater did get word this week that two projects scored well in the ADEC loan solicitation and have been placed on the priority list for the department in FY18. They're the Scow Bay Pump Station, number one, replacement project. It's been included in the funding plan for $550,000 loan, and the Pump Station 4 Force Main replacement projects has been approved for a $360,000 loan with principal forgiveness of $72,000. Current rates have been developed to account for the debt retirement on these projects, so no additional rate increases are anticipated. The free annual household hazardous waste collection event is scheduled for the weekend of June 3rd and 4th. The community will be able to deliver unwanted materials such as paint, varnish, shellac, spray cans, herbicides, pesticides, oil, antifreeze, household cleaners, and many other products that should not go in a garbage can or down the drain. There's no charge to residential customers, but there is a 200-pound limit per customer. Commercial customers can plan for disposal directly with the borough's vendor, Carson Dorn of Juneau. Pat Weaver is undertaking a water and sewer extension program, a project into her Bayview Estates subdivision. The work has been designed by a professional engineer, and ADEC has provided approvals to construct the improvements. As the end goal is to dedicate the utilities to the borough at a future date, Ms. Weaver is paying for a borough inspector to keep an eye on the work and verify that the plans and standards of the borough are followed. I believe Marty Susort will be handling that for the borough. So,
any questions of Steve's report? I've got a question. I'm not really in favor of what Senate Bill 91. I didn't realize that you could go home. And you had to come and serve for your first DUI. Is that, Kelly, do you have, I mean, all they have to do is call in and they don't have no ankle bracelet, no.
There are some communities that are using electronic monitoring, but we don't have that capability and DOC doesn't plan to put it here. So that was part of the mandate in Senate Bill 91. First time DUI offenders have to serve their time at a private residence. So that's the deal. They check in and then call us once a day to confirm they're doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Ah, interesting. All right, thanks. Any other questions? No? Okay. Get back on track here. That brings us to unfinished business. First item on under unfinished business this evening, excuse me, is Ordinance 2017-06. This is an ordinance proposing amendments to Chapter 4.28, sales tax of the Petersburg Borough Code to increase the sales tax exemption cap for a single sale from $1,200 to $5,000 and to eliminate the exemption for the sale of goods purchased within the borough for use outside the borough and directing that the proposed code amendments be submitted to the qualified voters of the Petersburg Borough. This is the third and final reading of this ordinance. I'd entertain a motion to adopt this ordinance.
So move.
Second.
Motion has been made by Member Strand, seconded by Member Greger to adopt Ordinance 2017-06. Any discussion?
Mr. Mayor, I have two proposed amendments to this, and I'd like to take them one at a time. After the emails that we've received and listening to some of the testimony given, I'd like to propose that, first of all, the first amendment would be has to do with the $5,000 cap that we wanted to raise it from $1,200 to $5,000. I would propose that we change that $5,000 cap back to $1,500. That's even now $200 less than what the tax committee came up with about 3 years ago, I believe. And so I move that we move the tax cap rather than to $5,000 that is in there back to $1,500. And I believe that change is before you there with Debbie's help. I think we tried to put it into print here. Thank you, Debbie.
Is there a second to that amendment? Nancy, was that a second?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, motion made by amendment made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Strand. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Okay.
I guess maybe a point of clarification for Member Lynn of what purpose were you hoping to accomplish by going from 5,000 to 1,500, or what was the goal you were looking at?
Well, the goal I was looking at is that we get a change of approximately $300 difference is all, but at least it is a change from where we are right now. And the difference in taxes is, I believe, is, if I remember, is about, correct me if I'm wrong, Jody, but is it about $30, the difference?
$18.
$18, okay, is what it would make, the difference in the taxes that somebody would have to pay now. And so, listening to everybody, I think it's reasonable to make that change.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
Just a real quick comment here. I'm glad to see that Bob came down to 1,500 because I would have been opposed to leaving it at 5,000. Seeing how this kind of came out of the blue for the tax committee, you know, when we met with them up at the A&B hall, they just, where did this come from? So because of the suddenness of it, I'm glad to see that we dropped it to 1,500. So I would be probably more in favor of going to 1,500 than I certainly would have gone to 5,000. So.
Okay. Any other discussion, Nancy?
I agree with Kurt. I think 1,500 has a greater chance of passage than 5,000.
Yeah, I agree with that. And we could see what it does for the next fiscal year and see if we need more adjustments. So any other discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, the clerk call the roll.
Jay?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay, the amendment to lower the tax cap as proposed before from 5,000 to 1,500 passes. And I understand you have another amendment, Bob?
I do. And the second one has to do with the elimination of the sales tax exemption for sales of goods for use outside of the borough. We had a number of folks talk to us about internet sales and sales that are made by people who either call by telephonically to in town, and then those products, or email, it doesn't matter, but those products are then are sent outside of town. The way we have the way the proposition was changed, it would have taxed all those items. The proposed amendment I have here in front of you, and I think you all have a copy of it here, would allow all those sales to go forward without tax. That would take care, after we looked at it, that would take care of a majority of the comments we received, you know, that this was really going to affect business in town. It doesn't take care of all of them, but it takes care of, I would say, probably 70-80% of the comments we received. And so the language you have in front of you then would allow those sales to go tax-free.
Okay, so this is in the form of a motion to add all the text that's in red?
That's correct. That's correct on that proposition.
Yeah, maybe we should read that or make it in the form of a motion that states what we're talking about. So it's shall the Petersburg Borough Code, Chapter 4.28, entitled Sales Tax, be amended to, this is in red, limit, and then we'd eliminate the word eliminate, the exemption for sales of goods to be used, this is in red, to be used outside the borough to those ordered either online or by telephone or mail from outside the borough to a buyer who resides or has its principal place of business outside the borough. So those would be taxed. Is that the way I understand it? And a yes vote will limit the exemption only to sales made up to non-resident buyers not physically present in the borough at the time of the sale, placing the order from outside the borough either online or by telephone or mail. So we need a second for this amendment.
I'm confused. You're amending to keep the tax on items that are purchased by someone who's locally, physically here?
If a person would either telephone or call in or send an email, and they come here and purchase it, they're going to pay tax, Nancy. If it's sent out of town by a common carrier, it's not going to be taxed.
Clarification.
Go ahead.
You were correct, Nancy. So basically, if an order is placed on the telephone, by mail, or online, so the non-resident buyer places the order and they are not physically in Petersburg, they will pay no taxes on that order being shipped to them outside of the borough. If a person is here in Petersburg and doesn't live here, doesn't matter whether you're a resident or not, and you buy that product, and even if it's being shipped to you, you will pay sales tax on it because you are here in the borough.
And that is the amendment we're making.
Correct.
Yes. Right.
Second.
Yeah.
Sir.
Okay, motion was made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Greger to amend the eliminating the sales tax exemption for sales of goods for use outside the borough, as we've just discussed. So is there any more discussion on this amendment? Jay?
And just a quick thought for myself of, I think I'll be voting for this amendment because I think it's reasonable. And more importantly, I think then I'll be voting for for this on a whole because in the end, it will be up to the citizens of Petersburg to decide if we want this enacted, not just the seven of us. So I'll be voting for that today.
Okay. Any other discussion? Cindy?
Just a little housekeeping. That $5,000 on page one in the second whereas will need to be changed passes.
Thank you, Cindy.
And also section four, item B, has 1,500 twice and 1,200 once, and those figures will need to be changed consistent.
And I agree with Jay. This is I'll be in favor of these two amendments. It'll be on the ballot this fall. That's all we're doing is putting it on the ballot for the voters of Petersburg to decide if they want us to move forward. Any other discussion on this second amendment?
And real quick, this is just a continuation of what other communities do. So we're not reinventing the wheel here. So I will also be voting for this.
Okay. Will the clerk call the roll on the amendment, second amendment?
Kurt?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes. Okay, the second amendment passes 6-0. Now we will, is there any discussion on the main motion for ordinance to adopt ordinance 2017-06 as amended? Clerk, call the roll.
Cindy?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay. Ordinance 2017-06 passes unanimously. Those two subjects will be listed on the ballot this fall individually. The next item on the agenda is Ordinance 2017-07. This is an ordinance of the Petersburg Borough adopting the budget for fiscal year July 1st, 2017 through June 30th, 2018. This is the second reading. Entertain a motion to adopt this resolution or this ordinance.
So move.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on this ordinance?
I would like to make a couple of amendments to this ordinance. I would like to reinstate that $750,000 that we took away from him on the first reading because he was going to use that money for repairing aging infrastructure. And I'm kind of more a proactive guy when it comes to replacing parts and things like that instead of waiting for crisis management. And Joe has, come up with a long-term maintenance list of what needs to be replaced, in a timely manner. And if we take that $750,000 away from him, I'm not sure how he's going to be able to do that. So, and then that's the First Amendment.
Let's do one at a time. Okay. Otherwise, it's going to get confusing this last time. And Bob, you have?
Go ahead.
Is there a second on the amendment?
Right.
Not yet. So your amendment is to reinstate the $750,000 that we took out of power and light budget that was going to be used for the
purchase
of the building and the parking lot?
Purchase of the building and parking lot.
Well, no, there was something else. When I discussed that with you this afternoon, could you explain why you'd like to have that money back that we took away from you?
I think before we go any farther on discussion.
I'll second for the second.
Okay, yeah.
Thanks, Jay.
Motion's been made to reinstate the $750,000 that the Assembly removed from Power and Light's budget to purchase the building on Birch Street and build a parking lot. And seconded by Mr. Lynn.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Let Joe explain. Maybe I misread what he was saying.
I thought that's what I'm understanding.
Okay.
That's my understanding, too, okay. When I ask
okay.
questions.
Okay.
Is that what you were referring to today,
Joe, or did I just dig myself a big hole?
The reason I brought it up is because I was receiving mixed signals. I had signals from the Assembly that you wanted to spend our reserve on our infrastructure, aging infrastructure. And so I was asked to put together a long-range capital project schedule, which I did, and over the plan that I put together, that over the next 4 to 5 years, we would spend roughly $4 million on our aging infrastructure, and what this would do would be to reduce our reserve from somewhere between $7 and $8 million down to around 3.5, which is really the basement. That's we don't dare go any lower than that. So it was part of this plan. I put the plan together, and so for year number one, I put in roughly $1 million as part of that plan. And then, lo and behold, during the budgetary process, why the money was taken out, so that leaves only $250,000 in there. But I was confused as to what your wishes really are. Do you want to spend down that reserve or no?
And any
point, as a point of clarification, if we're talking about a specific line item,
right?
That line item we were addressing, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, was regarding the Bird Street lot, as you said. That is the specific thing we were referring to with that money. Is this correct?
I'm not sure I've got this. I think that's the action the Assembly took. There was a Power Light Superintendent Nelson gave us his list like he's talking about, right. And the one item that we removed was the parking lot.
Correct.
For $750,000. That's
okay.
Was the amount. So okay. That's the only correlation I have between
okay.
The project list. Without having the list in front of me, that's right. The way I remember right. It.
So let me ask you this then. If we reinstated it, would you go ahead and do the Birch Street parking lot, or would you use it to replace aging transformers or aging telephone poles or things like that?
A little clarification here. You keep talking about a parking lot. I don't have a project that's called a parking lot. I have a project that's called plant improvements, and probably the oldest piece of infrastructure we have on the system is this plant across the street. I don't think there's any question about that. And for the last 20 or 30 years, it's been severely neglected because the plan was to move it out the road. So we did do nothing with it. We just kind of let it be for the last 20 to 30 years. We can't neglect it any longer. So in my professional opinion, of all the infrastructure that we've got, what needs to be done first is this project, which includes additional parking space. But it also includes trying to move things around so that we can alleviate this situation where we have 6 gallons in a 5-gallon bucket, and we can't even drive in and out of our area there without backing into traffic. I can't get in and out of my parking place without backing in and out of traffic on the busiest intersection in town. So there is a definite need there. It is not a glorified parking lot. It is a needed project, and it was well-defined as I put it into the budget. And the city manager took a look at it, and he agreed that, yes, this is something that needs to be done. So with that clarification, if the money is put back into the budget without any further direction from the Assembly or from my boss, the city manager, then, yes, we would move forward with that plant improvement project.
Is there a list of the Power and Light Superintendent's plan changes available to us at short notice? Do you have one, Jody?
Well, she's going to have one more point of clarification.
Right.
Joe, one more point of clarification. As part of that project list, was that purchasing property adjacent to the building over there or to your our current property?
That's correct. We purchased that property where the present owner has to use our parking lot as access to their property.
Thank you, sir.
Not right now, Scott. Thanks. Joe, this list that you generated, it starts with item one from hydro generator rewind down to item nine, which is plant improvement. Is that in a prioritization? Is that in a prioritized from one?
No, that's just how they came to mind. They did not prioritize them. I only did that when I put the budget together.
Okay. Anybody else want to look at this real quick? I guess it's irrelevant.
For instance, the one that you mentioned, the rewind of the hydro, that's not something we can do immediately.
Okay.
Okay, it would take about a year's planning before we could ever do that. So,
yeah.
Again, I mean, that's what you pay me for, is to put these things together and set a priority on them and give you my professional opinion. And
so if this list was to be prioritized, would the purchase of that property on Birch Street be number one? Is that the most important for the infrastructure and the system in Petersburg?
The purchase of that property is key to the project. It wouldn't be much sense moving forward with it unless we had that space to deal with.
Right, but I don't know if that was a full answer to my question. Is that the most important infrastructure project as far as distribution in the borough for power distribution?
It's the most important one that we can do on short notice. I wouldn't say it's more important than rewinding the hydro, no, but it's in order to have something in the budget this year, as I was directed to do, that's the one that has a priority.
Okay. Any other questions, Jay?
Yeah, sorry, Joe. Maybe this is an obvious question, but I'm assuming the property is for sale then at this point?
Not to my knowledge, but I think the price just went up.
Fair enough. Thank you, Joe.
Okay. Any other assembly member discussion on this amendment? And I believe the amendment is to include that $775 or whatever it is for the plant improvement back into the budget. Is there any other discussion on that? Nancy?
I can't support that. If the $750,000 were going to be spent on actually replacing aging infrastructure, I probably could go along with it. But I believe there's going to be an extensive Corps of Engineers permitting process to put gravel in over there. It's not. I don't think it's something that can be done in a year, but I'm not in favor of it.
Okay, and I guess one other point to make is that if this doesn't get reinstated into the budget, it doesn't mean that it can't be put back in the next year's budget, and you can move forward with some of the other infrastructure projects. That's just my opinion. So I don't think I'm going to be voting in favor of the amendment. So yeah. With that being said, will the clerk call a roll on the amendment?
Jay?
No.
Bob?
No.
Cindy?
No.
Mark?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Okay, the amendment to add that item back into that plant improvement back into the Power and Light budget for this fiscal year is that amendment has failed with a vote of 5-1 with Member Wallhuter voting in favor of it. And now we're back to
my second amendment.
I'm which sure there'll be more. This okay. might be okay. That's why we should do it one at a time.
Okay. I'd like to reinstate the position for the lineman. Because when I talked to Joe today, there's a lot of stuff in the very near future.
Point of clarification. The lineman has never been removed from the budget. Am I correct, Debbie?
That is correct.
Okay.
Oh, it's still in the budget?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Then I retract that, rescind that.
I did. We could have.
Thank you.
Forward, but yeah, I just thought I'd clarify
okay.
that.
As long as it's available there for him so he can do that.
Okay.
I would encourage getting another lineman.
Okay. Sorry.
But okay. No. Thanks for clarification.
So now we're back.
A lot of trouble.
To ordinance 2017-07. It's adopting the budget for fiscal year 2017 and 18. Is there any other amendments, Bob?
I would like to move to reinstate the PILT funds for the city of Kuprnoff. as we had in fiscal year 17.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Motion been made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Loggadocus to reinstate the PILT payment to the city of Kuprinoff. We had just received a letter from them. Jody, just for clarification, do you have that dollar amount? Was it? Just so we know what we're.
So in fiscal year 2015, we used the percentage of 0.69% of our PILT funding that we received. Because that's approximately what they got every year when they were receiving PILT funds,
okay.
Which is approximately $4,400. And okay. It's been about consistent each year.
So it'll be roughly in that?
Yes.
Okay, any other discussion? Nancy?
Didn't we decide last year that that would be the last year for this?
I don't know. I'd have to... Assemblies aren't held by, you know, I don't know what the accountable for actions of a prior assembly. So this assembly could change that if they wanted to, I believe. Cindy?
I just wanted to add that we have, if we're allowing them to take over management of the harbor, of the dock over there, and they are moving forward with some other acquisition of some funding to improve the dock, that this would... help them with some capability in that regard as well.
Okay. And like we discussed earlier in the evening, the PILT money has been authorized for this year. Any other discussion on the amendment?
I just have a question. Has this proposition been approved by the state, allowing Kuprinoff to take over responsibility for that dock?
Not to my knowledge. Debbie, have you heard anything?
No, and the state can't approve it until we actually change our charter, which will be on the October ballot.
Right, so...
If the voters approve the change.
Change the charter to let Kuprinoff have a harbor within our borough. Okay, interesting. Any other discussion on the amendment?
Okay.
Clerk, call the roll.
Mark?
No.
Kurt?
Yes.
Bob?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Cindy?
Yes.
Okay, that amendment to reinstate the $4,400 or whatever the figure works out to be to the city of Kuprinoff passes on a 4-2 vote with myself and Member Strand in opposition. Back to the main ordinance. For adopting the budget for this year. Bob?
I have one more amendment here. I would like to amend that we, rather than to go to 4.4 mills area-wide for education, that we hold it at 4 mills, and that we use $540,000 of the Secure Rural Schools funds to make up the difference, to keep and use $1.260 million of our property taxes. For school.
Is there a second to that amendment?
I'll second for the sake of discussion.
Discussion. A motion made by Member Lynn, seconded by Member Greger to use the numbers he put out, $540,000 from Secure Rural School balance, funds. And then the balance to come out of our general fund to pay for the school.
Right. And the reason I believe that is that I think there's a very good chance we're going to get to Secure Rural Schools funds. But even if we don't, we have sufficient money to cover it, one. And two, that the balance we have in there is that I see no reason why we should not be bringing that balance down a little bit and holding that the mill rate where it is this current year or the coming year.
Any other comments on the amendment? Nancy?
The budget, the way it is now with $400,000, allows for this SRS funding that we have to last for 9 years. If we increase that amount, it only lasts for 6¾ or something. So I think we need to save it as long as possible. They can tell us that SRS has a good chance of passing, but until we actually see it, it hasn't passed.
The problem with raising mill rate, in my mind, is once it goes up, it never goes down. And so I really think we need to stay where it is, not raise it until we need to.
Jay, you had a comment?
Yeah, Jody, since you're here this evening, can't quite see you, but I'd like your two cents on the matter, if you would, please.
Well, if we left at 400,000, it would last for over 9 years. And if we increase it to 540, like Nancy said, it will last for only 6 years. We don't know what's going to happen. And we can change it next year. It's your call. It's your decision. I know that's not what you want to hear, but I like the conservative approach, but others might not. So,
quick follow-up. Why do you like the conservative approach on this one, Jody?
Because I like to save money. So.
Thank you.
Any other discussion on this amendment to make that change? Member Lynn?
One question, just for clarification. Oh, go ahead. A clarification for Bob here is that you wanted to go from the projected 4.4 to just 4 mil?
Yes, same as it was.
So eliminate the 0.4 mil.
Right.
Okay, that's all on this amendment, too. Okay.
Steve, you have a comment?
Just an observation. This money is not just used for giving the school operational funds, which is what we're talking about. They've also at times used it to tap in for matches on capital projects. So when we're talking about 6 years versus 9 years and those set dollar amounts, that formula changes if the school has to spend money on a capital project and request that the money come out of that fund. So again, just a reminder that it's not just used for, for if they get a grant to redo the kitchen or something like that, they're going to need match money for that, and that generally would come out of this account.
My comment is that just similar to what I made on the radio show Borough Business today. I mean, I would just as soon lower the mill rate so we're not, increasing property tax to people. And if we get funded for secure rural schools this year, which I know it's not a given, but I'm fairly optimistic from what I've heard, it'll be 7 years and possibly 8 years that this money will last. And like I made the statement I made this afternoon was, that's quite a few years to see how things progress, I guess. So if you can't figure something out to adjust your financial situation in 7, I don't know that you're going to be able to in 9 with, one more year's extension. Hopefully funding will keep coming from the federal government. So, any other comments? Clerk, call the roll on the amendment.
Cindy?
No.
Kurt?
No.
Jay?
No.
Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Nancy?
No.
Okay, that amendment fails with a 4-2 vote in the second reading. Now we're back to the main motion, and it's our budget for 2017 to 2018. Is there any other amendments proposed?
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I just wanted to make a comment. You added in the PILT funding, so that means our budget is going to be in the hole negative $4,400. So I was wondering if someone wanted to make an amendment to possibly offset that by using contingency money or another way.
I would move that we take it from the contingency.
And I will second that.
Okay, well, discussion on that motion.
The contingency is $90,000.
Right. Correct. Okay, clerk, call the roll.
Okay, for amendment number 4. Sorry, I'm getting prepared here. All right. Bob?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay, is there any other amendments to the main motion? I'd like to make a comment. There's a few items on here that I know it was in emails that's been around just sent out to the assembly. I don't know if it's public knowledge. In this budget, there's a proposed wage increase for all department heads, which is going to amount to $41,000. If I could make a motion, I would probably ask that we didn't do that this year, since we're so close on the budget. Another item in the budget is we're counting on $30,000 of revenue from marijuana tax sales. And if we're going into the contingency to balance a $4,400 deficit, I'm not so sure that money's going to show up. So I just wanted to make those comments. And I will vote for the budget as proposed in the second reading, but I will give it some more thought before the third reading. Any other discussion? If not, will the clerk call the roll?
Bob?
No.
Cindy?
Yes.
Jay?
Yes.
Mark?
Yes.
Kurt?
Yes.
Nancy?
Yes.
Okay. Ordinance 2017 passes in its second reading. Assuming there might be changes next time, but we won't know that till we get there. Next item is ordinance